Hi, Dog Mamas. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach Carolinas and a well-oiled canine. This podcast is dedicated to all things natural wellness for dogs. We'll spend time talking about nutrition, essential oils, homeopathy, and other things that you as a dog mama can implement in your own wellness journey. We also take this opportunity to remind you that this presentation is for educational purposes only. Nothing in this is intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness. This is not intended to replace any veterinary care. You are encouraged to discuss your own medical concerns and the individual needs of your pet with your veterinarian. So now I invite you to come, sit, and stay well as you enjoy the show. Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. Dana Brigman from the Canine Coach Carolinas and Well Old Canine. I have with me again today Dr. Barb Fox. I'll tell you more about how to find her in a second, but we're going to be talking today about dilated cardiomyopathy, or DCM, which I'm going to let her explain it a whole lot more, but it's a heart condition that our dogs have. And there is a big controversy, Dr. Barb, or a big brouhaha out in the animal space and the veterinary space about foods and how that affects our animals with this issue. So I'm looking forward to this discussion, and I'm happy to have you with us today. And for those that are looking for Dr. Barb, her books, her online training about nutrition and essential oils, or even to schedule a consultation with her, you can visit learn.barbfoxdvm.com, right? Is that the right?
Thanks, Dana. That's perfect.
Okay. So Dr. Barb, welcome to you again. I'm happy to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
So dilated cardiomyopathy is something that I am painfully familiar with because my own Great Dane dropped in front of me one night at 6 years old. He was 165 pounds, living alone. I picked him up and carried him to my car by myself. I gave myself a hernia. I didn't know it at the time, but I did.
No.
And, within a couple of days, he was diagnosed with DCM, was given a very short prognosis of 6 months maximum, and within maybe 6 weeks, he was gone. So can you tell us what DCM is? We often hear there is a predisposition to it in some breeds. So can you guide us, into those topics?
Sure, Dana. Unfortunately, dilated cardiomyopathy is a very serious situation. This means that a dog is in severe heart failure. And what happens, there are two types of heart conditions. One is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and one is dilated cardiomyopathy. Now, hypertrophic happens mainly in cats. Dilated cardiomyopathy happens mainly in dogs. So if you can imagine the heart being not functioning well at all, and it's working extra super hard to pump blood, the walls of the ventricles, these are the lower chambers of the heart, get really what we call almost flabby. They're stretched out, thin, kind of like if you imagine yourself blowing up a balloon over and over and over again, how the latex gets stretched.
Right.
Well, that's what happens with the heart muscle. And so then the heart enlarges because more blood is flowing into there. It can't be pumped out efficiently. So there are two types of heart failure. One is what we call left-sided and one called right-sided. So if the right ventricle, if blood is pooling up in that and it can't pump back into the body, then we typically see these dogs and even humans with distended abdomens. They look like they're a little water balloon. And in left-sided heart failure, where the left ventricle isn't pumping well, we tend to see more fluid accumulation in the chest. Inevitably, at the end stage of this, both the abdomen and the chest fill up with fluid, and the animal can't breathe well because of the fluid accumulation. The heart can't pump blood to the organs of the body, And you'll see weakness, you'll see muscle atrophy because the tissues are just basically getting starved from oxygen deprivation. And eventually the heart can't compensate anymore and the animal succumbs. So certain breeds are have a hereditary component to them. And we tend to see this, there's boxers, they have their own little thing we call boxer cardiomyopathy. Mainly that is more of an arrhythmia type of problem where the heart goes into a very erratic, you know, like if you put the stethoscope on these guys, it's just like, wow, they're having a dance party. That heart's having a dance party in that chest, you know? And it's really, when you hear it, it's really scary. Mm-hmm. And they can die at any time from ventricular tachycardia, basically. So fortunately, there are drugs to help with that. But then we look at Great Danes, we look at Irish Wolfhounds, even Golden Retrievers are, we're seeing more DCM and Retrievers, Great Danes, Dobermans, mainly just the large breeds. We don't typically see DCM in the smaller breeds of dogs, okay, as a rule.
When this happened to me years ago, or to my dog, everybody said, oh, that's just kind of the way it is. But one of the things that I was researching was it was really any deep chested animal could be more predisposed to that. And so I got a little scared about my dachshunds because, you know, they're big barrel chested too, even though they're tiny little creatures. So they're at less risk. Frankly, I've never heard of a dog that or a dachshund that had that, but is it possible?
I think it's possible, Dana, but there's not a hereditary disposition, predisposition to that. Now, in the smaller breeds, like your poodles, your doxies, your even some of your medium-sized dogs, we'll see mitral valve problems, and that can lead to cardiomyopathies. But because the valve in the heart chamber, mm-hmm, is not closing all the way, and so it leaks blood into those ventricles. So that's a totally different situation, but we treat a lot of these the same way.
So you mentioned seeing sort of a distended abdomen, or I would imagine we might see some dogs, you know, starting to slow down their energy or things of that nature. I had no clue that my dog had this was going on, right? I mean, he literally dropped in front of me and I was like, what just happened? Are there things that with these dogs predisposed to this potential issue that we can do proactively or that our vets should be checking for in their youth?
Absolutely. You know, and for example, let's just go to the King Charles Cavalier, okay? They have problems with mitral valve. That's a hereditary predisposition, I should say, mm-hmm, to mitral valve problems. So I counsel those clients to bring them in at least 3 times a year to, okay, check their heart, listen carefully, and don't let it go. You know, a lot of veterinarians they'll hear a heart murmur and they'll say, well, just let's keep an eye on it. Since your dog isn't coughing, your dog is not having any exercise intolerance, let's just let it go. That's wrong in my opinion. And we'll get into more of the things that we can kind of mitigate or offset, you know, with these heart conditions, mm-hmm, as far as diet and supplements and so on and so forth. But a lot of times veterinarians don't listen to the heart like they should. There's 4 main places that we listen to on a dog's chest. One is on the upper left, the lower left, the upper right, and the lower right. And so you can, it's just not good to listen to one part of the heart. I've had dogs like they've got, you know, like a tumor in the chest or something. The heart sounds great on the left side, but you can't hear it or it's muffled on the right side. Then we take it to x-ray and make sure that there's nothing going on there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people just come in for their, and I'm going to say this in quotation marks, their annual shots. Right. And a lot of times a full exam is not done. Now, as a holistic veterinarian, I go further. I want to look at everything in that dog's environment, including diet,
yeah,
reducing the number of vaccines, on and on and on.
Yeah.
And if you catch these things early, I think that you can mitigate a lot of these problems and extend the life. Now, we can't cure dilated cardiomyopathy, but we can sure help offset and, like I said, mitigate the effects of it.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, and I think maybe of yours too, or at least you know who she is, Paula Vandervoort, is a breeder of boxer. She does natural rearing and natural breeding, really, of boxers. And she talks about how she puts basically a Holter, I think it's called a Holter monitor, on her dog. She owns one herself and does some testing with that. Should the average pet parent do that on an annual basis, perhaps?
I don't think so. I don't know how expensive those Holter monitors are. I used to have one. I had a heart murmur when I was younger, and I had to wear one for 24 hours. But unless you actually know what you're doing with that, you'd have to go through some special training. And I don't think the average person is going to be willing to do that. I know who you're talking about. I know Paula.
Yeah.
And I know that she is specialized in a lot of different things. Sure. So for her, it might be great as a breeder, but for the average, like for example, I have a great big breeding farm they're Labradors, and very good quality Labradors. And as early as 6 weeks of age, I'm listening to their hearts very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. You can pick up a lot of these early murmurs. We've had some severe murmurs in those dogs, and then they have to make the decision, are they going to try to treat that, or is it too late to do anything with?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the early detection is great, and those puppy exams are really important. You just shouldn't be going into the vet's office to get shots. And if your veterinarian is not willing to do a full exam, request one. You may pay a little extra for it, but it's really worth it in the end.
Totally. So one of the things that we hear now in the veterinary space, I hear it in the trainer space, and certainly in the dog lover space, is this notion of a taurine deficiency. Can you tell us what taurine is? Why being deficient in taurine affects the heart, and what we can do about that. And I'll just go ahead and tee up this question too. Many veterinarians are recommending that we return to a grain-based diet. Can you tell us why that might not be our wisest response?
Okay, Dana, loaded questions there.
I know.
Are you ready?
I'm all in.
Okay. You may have to just give me a little prompt on some of the parts of your question, but let's start with taurine.
Okay.
Taurine is an amino acid that dogs can manufacture from two other amino acids in the body, and those two amino acids are cysteine and methionine.
Mm-hmm.
So cats are different in that they can't manufacture taurine, and they have to get it from their diet. The problem with a lot of these diets today is heavily processed kibble. When it goes through the extrusion and the pressure processing of it, a lot of the taurine is destroyed. So normally, I'm just going to back up here. I'm going to tell you a little story. Let's go with taurine. I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
Uh-huh.
Taurine, being an amino acid, is very crucial for heart, eye, liver, digestive health. It has a lot of different functions, but basically it is one that is very important, like I said, for heart function. And your omega-3s, hawthorn berries, a lot of times you don't need to supplement with taurine because you're getting it in the meat.
Right.
And especially dark meat chicken, I found out that has a really high level of taurine in it. So, and taurine, fortunately, is one of those amino acids that is not, unless it's over 500 degrees, it's not destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, in the commercial pet food industry, where they process it very heavily at very high heats for short periods of time, the taurine is usually destroyed. And then they have to coat that kibble with vitamins and minerals and amino acids to restore what has been destroyed in the processing.
Right.
So Dr. Pitcairn, Dr. Richard Pitcairn, I should say, I can't, it's P-I-T-C-A-I-R-N. You've probably heard of him.
I do know of him. Yes, I have books and websites and all sorts of stuff with him.
So he did his own private study and, over several hundred dogs, and he found out that there was zero, and I mean zero, dilated cardiomyopathy cases in the raw feeders. When the dogs were getting a raw diet, there were zero cases of DCM.
Wow.
And interestingly, I'm going to probably go a little further. Here is what you have to know when there is a study or a test done.
Okay.
Tests can be flawed.
Sure.
Tests can be twisted. Results can be skewed to fit the narrative that that company wants. So, okay, so the University of California did a study, and what they were doing was they were trying to compare legume diets to non-legume diets, because the whole thing behind the attack on grain-free food was, are legumes interfering with taurine uptake in the dog's body?
Right.
So they took companies, they had certain criteria, but one of the criteria was that they had to have no legumes in the top five ingredients. And then they took foods with legumes in the top five ingredients. And they compared those. And they were saying that there was a definite correlation between the legume diet and cases of DCM. However, here's the big flaw, and I got this right off of the Truth About Pet Food website. That's a great website for anybody that wants to find out more. But the big flaw was that there were companies like Royal Canin, brands of Purina Pro Plan, Eukanuba, and other brands that had soybean or soybean protein listed in the top five ingredients. What are soybeans? They're legumes. Mm-hmm. They're part of the bean family.
Right.
And all beans are legumes. Yeah. So right there, that entire study was flawed.
Yeah.
So, and oftentimes, this is just my personal opinion, but after 63 years of being on this planet, and
you're not that old, Dr. Barr.
Oh, yes, I am, dear. I'm that young, okay? But you have to take everything with a grain of salt and question everything. Now, the whole issue with DCM and finding out that certain, you know, here again I go, do we look at a study of only 500 dogs and then pinpoint the diet as being the culprit?
Yeah. Well, and if I can just pause you for a second,
sure.
I want to make a comment about that whole legume thing, right? My theory, and I am not a scientist by any imagination, but what I started thinking about was, if taurine is found in our meats, right? And assuming we haven't processed it to death, but it's found in our meats, our protein source got offset by adding in all of these plant-based proteins. And so now the total makeup of protein was not a meat-based protein as a whole. It was a combination of plant and meat, and potentially a whole lot more plant protein than ever before. So now if we've got reduced amounts of meat, which is where taurine is found, and we've got legumes that are potentially inhibiting the absorption of that, no wonder we had a deficiency.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole thing though, Dana, is they have not been able to point the finger at legumes. They have not been able to point the finger at grain-free foods. So until that has been, you know, proven, we're still going to have to look at other factors here.
Sure.
So that brings me to another point where, here again, I'm going to back up and talk about these research studies. So when they started finding these dogs, especially golden retrievers, having more incidences of DCM, they're questioning the owners about what they're feeding. This doc, I'm just going to call her Dr. Lisa. I don't want to
I understand. That's fair. Okay.
All right. This Dr. Lisa, she was head of Tufts, is or was head of the nutrition department at Tufts University, the Tufts Veterinary School. She blatantly comes out and says that it's not important to understand a food label. Clients don't need to know what's in their pet's food because it's already there. It's already proven that it's AFCO approved, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then she's implicating the boutique and the designer, kind of like the mom and pop boutique foods, as being implicated. Then if you dig really deep, and you won't find this easily, but I discovered that she was employed by three of the big pet food companies. So then I go red flag, red flag, red flag. Because of the movement of everybody, you know, these dog mamas and dog dads going to making their own food, feeding raw or feeding a high quality kibble, which that's kind of a misnomer anyway.
Right.
But pet owners are trying to do everything they can to do the best for their animal. And they're getting away from the big box stores. They're getting away from the big pet food giants.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, these big companies, these corporations are getting scared. And so then I go, are they intentionally trying to point the finger at something that may not be the cause? I mean, you have, and that's my skeptical mind. But again, as a holistic veterinarian, I search everything. I research everything. So I'm going to just go, I was starting to mention why we can't just point the finger at that.
Okay.
Nothing has been mentioned with the DCM cases. Are there other toxins? Are there other factors like over-vaccinating our animals that can inadvertently cause an autoimmune condition that can affect the heart?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that because nobody's looked at that. These 3-month flea and tick pills, Bravecto is one.
Right.
So what those are, they're neurologic toxins. What they do is they affect the nervous system of the insect, and it eventually paralyzes the insect and kills them.
Right. So, I'm just going to ask you, because I talk about this a lot with my clients, what does that neurotoxin do as it courses through your dog's veins every day of its life?
Correct. What it does, it's a GABA, like let's just take Bravecto because I've looked at that more than any of them. It's a GABA antagonist, meaning that it interferes with the cell receptors in the nerves. And if it affects the insects, it has to affect the dog. In fact, they now have a warning label. If your dog has a seizure disorder, you probably shouldn't be using Bravecto.
I want people to understand that, right?
Yeah,
we use a neurotoxin to kill a living entity. That neurotoxin is in your dog's body at all times. That's a dangerous thing.
It is. And the thing is that they're saying that overweight dogs will store more of the active ingredient, which is fluoroner. There's different ways to pronounce that. But these doses build up. And like I said, it stores in the fat tissue. So what's to say that after years of using this product, your dog is getting a horrible toxicity from this?
Yeah.
There was even a Facebook page on Bravecto killed my dog, and Merck kind of put a gag order on that and threatened to sue the administrator of that Facebook page. So they changed the name, and I'm not sure what it is now. But if you start reading all these, you know, and it's just like you could say, oh, that's just a coincidence. But when a healthy dog goal into a major grand mal seizure 24 hours after getting the product, you have to go red flag, you know, and you have to look at that. So my whole thing is like over vaccinating, putting the chemicals on the dogs. What's to say that that isn't implicated or could be implicated in these cases of DCM as well? Because we really don't know.
Right. So Dr. Barb, just a little tiny bit off course for a second. When we talk about like using a flea and tick topical or an oral or vaccines or whatever they are, I often hear people say to me, well, I've used them forever and never had a problem. Or, you know, my last dog didn't have this problem. I think it's important, and I just want you to reiterate what you just said, that there is a buildup of toxicity, that there comes, that the dog's body basically says, I resist, I resist, I resist. And then some point, they simply can't resist anymore. And we're now in these acute or chronic crises. Right? Am I right in that?
Absolutely. And just because, let's put it this way, what happens on the outside of the dog may be very different than what's happening on the inside. Mm-hmm. It takes, let's take kidney failure, for example. It takes 85% of the both kidneys function to be gone before it even shows up on blood work. This is why they're coming up with new tests that will indicate kidney failure earlier, because once you have 85% of your kidneys gone, there's not much left to filter out the toxins from the body. So cancers, you know, especially with the dogs that are predisposed to certain breeds that are predisposed to certain types of cancers. Your dog develops cancer at 10 years of age, maybe 8 years of age. And you say that, oh, he's never had a problem with the flea or tick products. What's to say that that toxicity from those flea and tick products isn't contributing to that cancer?
Right.
Or had a direct cause for it.
Right.
So, you know, I remember when I was a kid, mom and dad would come over and spray us, you know, all of our arms, all back of our head, all over with off or, you know, the DEET containing products.
Right.
And I had cancer 7 years ago, you know, and I'm like, I had all the vaccines as a child, and I reacted terribly to them.
Well, you know, so, it's funny you say that. I when I first started all this wellness stuff, I said, you know, I really don't have a story to tell, right? I mean, a dramatic story, right? We all have a story, but I didn't feel like I had a dramatic story of overcoming a health issue. And the other day, you know, obviously I look back at my dog with DCM, I look at one with a behavioral issue, and I go back and I'm like, all of this makes sense in that. But I also now look at me and think, there was a point where I had, we'll call it a female issue, that eventually led to a complete hysterectomy for me. Mm. And looking back, which is fine, hey, I'm happy to not have those parts right now, you know, but looking back, as I hear the stories of endocrine disruptors, it has to be related. It just has to. I can't separate all those out now.
Exactly. And I think we're going to see more and more of this, because until we get people awakened as to what these toxins can do to the body, you know, personal care products, cleaning products in your home. Oh, that brings me to another point. If you're using anything on your floors or, you know, the surfaces that your dogs walk on, they absorb that through the big sweat glands on the bottoms of the feet. Yeah. And this is why I hate it when vet clinics use those harsh chemicals.
Sure.
Chlorhexidine is one, and Rocal is another. I don't even know what the active ingredient is, but they wipe the table down. They wipe their floors, or, you know, mop their floors with this. And it might be still wet when your dog walks into the clinic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, your dog is absorbing that.
Yep.
Now I, and another one of my colleagues that I'm really good friends with, we use a special natural household cleaner that's completely non-toxic, and it is very effective. So we have to put all of these things in mind when we're looking at keeping our animals healthy.
So awesome. Can we go and talk about why going back to a grain-based food is not wise?
Oh, absolutely. Don't get me started. This may be a rant more than...
Okay. Let me put a couple quarters in and get you going.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about kibbles of food that have grain in them. The grain is cheap. Mm-hmm. It can be listed, especially like corn, can be listed as a protein, even though 70% of corn is not absorbed, or the protein from the corn is not absorbed. It's a cheap filler.
Sure.
And what's the number one in grain that is genetically modified?
Corn.
It's either corn or wheat. Mm-hmm. I think wheat is the number one and the corn is second, not very far behind. But genetically modified organisms are what I call Franken monsters in the food, because there are so many synthetic and genetic alterations done to the genetically modified components, your animals are taking this in. Also, corn and wheat have more glyphosate than any other grain. And so we don't want these things going into our bodies or our dogs' bodies.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about it, a wolf might chew on, you know, a strand of corn, or, you know, they might, and dogs go out and eat grass, so, but they're not vegetarians. Right. They can eat vegetables, and a lot of dogs do like veggies, but they're still obligate carnivores. And I shouldn't even say that, because some people think that dogs can't have anything besides meat. They are carnivores, I should say.
Yeah.
Cats are obligate carnivores, meaning they have to have meat to survive. So if you think about what an animal would eat, I go back to nature. What would it eat if it were outside, if it were out in the dog pack? They're going to go out and kill prey.
Right.
And that's where they get the raw enzymes. That's where they get the taurine that hasn't been altered. Okay. So meat is very high in protein, in taurine. Going back to taurine and heart health, you know, if I'm just going to stay here, you can probably eliminate 99.9% of your problems if your dog is not predisposed to a genetic, has a genetic component toward DCM. Raw diets, you can, like I said, be pretty assured that if your dog is on that, you're not going to have problems with DCM. So I'm not sure where you want to just kind of prompt me on that question again, Dana.
Well, you know, we're hearing a lot of veterinarians say, go back to the grain-based diet, go back to some of these lower quality. And they're like, we didn't have, the DCM wasn't an issue for those dogs on those foods. And I'm like, but there's a whole host of other issues. And I think you've done a good job of kind of highlighting what those are. So let's move into, if I go get a Great Dane today, which I'm not, but I thought about it. But if I go get a Great Dane, knowing that that breed is predisposed to this genetic issue or this inherited issue of DCM, beyond a raw fed diet, what other things can I do to support his heart proactively?
That's a great question, because it's a puppy. I would put him on a whole food supplement that is made for cardiac support. There is one company, and I'm not going to mention company names because we're not here to endorse anything, but this company makes what we call the whole food, meaning that it can be given as a food and it has all the super nutrients in it, all the trace minerals, vitamins that that animal needs to support the heart. I would also supplement with taurine, because we're not going to hurt anything by over-supplementing. Taurine is something that goes out in the urine, so if the dog or cat doesn't need it, it goes right out. You pee it out.
Thank you.
And taurine's fairly cheap. You can use the human-grade taurine. And so that's one thing that I would do. The other thing is, there are some studies done on L-carnitine, which is another amino acid, and that helps with circulation and blood flow. So if the heart does, you know, come up as an issue down the road, then you've already got that circumvented by supplementing. Omega-3s, sardines, and flaxseed oil is probably my favorite. You know, you have to be a little cautious around the fish oils, because they could contain extra mercury, other toxins, because of all the, you know, pollution in the oceans and so forth. But chia seeds are really high in omega-3s, and I think the omega-3s are something that we're not feeding enough of. We get plenty of omega-6s, but omega-3s is what really helps the heart. Okay. And then there are some studies done with hawthorn berries, and you can buy supplements with, or herbs, you know, a hawthorn berry is just basically a good cardiac support type of product.
I take those myself.
Do you? Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are a lot of other things you can do too, but I think the main thing is to be proactive, like getting your on these dogs that are predisposed to heart failure, we need to make sure that they're getting at least a twice a year exam.
Okay.
And not to ignore the signs. So like if your dog starts to poop out, maybe you've been walking 2 miles a day, and at mile and a half, your dog's starting to drag back. Then, and or if you start to notice the enlargement in the belly, and or a morning cough, or coughing that just seems to come out of nowhere, that's the time to not ignore those symptoms and get in. But like you said, like with your dog, you're the one that dropped in front of you, and I'm really sorry, Dana, that happened. That had to be horrible to see. But you had no signs or symptoms there.
Right.
So again, that's when we need to be getting in for those checkups and not letting your vet. Here's another thing. If your dog is in heart failure, you need to be very discretional about which vaccines are administered. Vaccines are meant to ward off disease, but oftentimes they overload the immune system and they can cause detrimental effects, mm-hmm. including anything with organ systems, and that includes the heart.
Yeah. Wow. It's quite the topic. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, quite the topic. So now, if we catch it early, beyond the hawthorn and the other supplements that you were talking about, is there anything else that we should, like, when Cole dropped and went in for a diagnosis, right? And it took him a couple of days to say, yes, this is dilated cardiomyopathy. And then they gave me a prognosis of 6 months. Was there anything I could have done? Anything I could have done at that diagnosis?
That's a good question, Dana, because I don't know how advanced it was. I really don't know how to answer that. But
and
I'm just
going and you're not going to, nothing you say is going to be like, oh, you should have, right?
Right.
I'm not going to feel bad about it because it is, and I believe that Cole is, this is a teaching opportunity through him, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that in terms of there are any guarantees or I feel like if I had not just accepted from the Great Dane community or the rescue community that, and that's another question I'll ask you in a minute, but that's just the way it is, right? Oh, he's predisposed to it. You just have to accept this, that if I had fought a little harder doing something, I may have been able to extend. Maybe not. Maybe it was too advanced. Maybe I missed some clues that I didn't know to look for, like you mentioned, the cough or the distended belly or not that I recall any of that, but maybe I missed something. I just feel like once we get a diagnosis, is there something to take action on?
A lot of these dogs, if it's really severe, have to go on some kind of pharmaceutical support. Okay. And that can extend the life of that dog. But like going back to the whole food supplements, I've actually had dogs that were like had mitral valve issues of, you know, they have like a grade 4 heart murmur and 6 is the worst. I've gotten it down to a grade 1 or 2, just supplementing. So you shouldn't give up. You're right. And I just want to point out one thing too. Not all dogs with dilated cardiomyopathy have low taurine levels. So we can't just implement taurine. Okay. And I believe that was the truth about pet food. They've got some great articles on there about dilated cardiomyopathy on there.
Right.
Let's go back to diet. Were you doing a raw feeder? Were you a raw feeder at that point?
Oh, Dr. Barb, no. And I'm embarrassed to say that. So at that time we were feeding a food called Solid Gold.
Correct.
Prior to that, so I got this, I knew nothing about Great Danes. I was in a relationship that he liked the breed, had that breed previously. So we took in a rescue. We got this little dog, he wasn't little, but we got him when he was 6 months old. And to be honest, I was feeding crap kibble.
Okay.
At that time in my life, I had a good job. It's not that we were overly budget conscious per se, meaning it's not that I couldn't afford a better food. I just trusted the marketing. I just trusted it on, you know, when they marketed to me a bag of kibble like Purina, that was a good food. I didn't know any better at the time. And then as I got into this rescue group, there was a girl in the group who was selling this Solid Gold. And I said, okay, we'll try that. And, but no, we were feeding kibble. And at that time, nobody talked to me about supplementing anything. We didn't talk about probiotics. We didn't talk about digestive enzymes. We didn't talk about ways to freshen up the food bowl. It was a bowl of kibble, period. And now I know better, and which is why I keep trying to educate other people on this. But yeah, no, we were not feeding raw.
Yeah. And you made a really good point about digestive issues, because all good health starts in the gut.
Right.
That there's no ifs, ands, or buts. And so with these dogs, like, I'm just going to back up here. If your veterinarian tries to talk you into one of those diets that starts with a letter of the alphabet or has specific breed, I'll just say it. So Royal Canin has different breed formulas. Like,
they do. One of my clients showed me one yesterday. They're like, look, this is for Shih Tzus. And I'm like, yeah, no. And so I started showing them how to read the label. And I told them, I said, the only reason you bought this food is because that dog looks like yours. There's nothing good in here. And so right. I changed. So they have 2 10-week-old puppies. And literally in a 1 hour conversation, they are now raw feeders.
Wonderful. Well, and a lot of people don't know. So I just did a consultation with a gentleman yesterday who had a boxer with the boxer cardiomyopathy, and he was in severe arrhythmia at that point. And they put him on Solitol, which is a prescription drug for that. And he was really proud of the fact that he's feeding the Royal Canin heart or boxer food. And I'm like, the only thing that may be different in those diets, say like for a boxer, is maybe they put in hawthorn berry.
Right.
You can supplement with that and save yourself a pile of money by, you know, how expensive those prescription diets are.
I do.
And then you look at the ingredients on the label and I shudder. I just like, are you kidding me? You're going to pay that much money for this junk?
Oh, I know. It's this cute little adorable bag with a little Shih Tzu puppy on it. And I started reading this stuff and I'm like, friends, I know you don't know me. You don't have to trust me as your trainer yet, but you cannot feed these puppies this.
Right. Exactly. A lot of people think, well, I can't do a homemade diet. I gave this client the other day a 5-ingredient diet. And I said, start with this. And even if you don't feel like, for those people who are not into raw, I don't have any problem with them starting with a lightly home cooked diet, right, as long as they're supplementing some raw organ meat in there. And you would be surprised at just how much of a change that makes. Mm-hmm. And then once they feel comfortable doing that, then we just kind of gently guide them onto the raw diet. And it's a win-win for everything, everybody.
Yeah. All right. Is there more to the DCM topic you would like to tell me about that? Because maybe I don't know what I don't know. Is there more to layer into this discussion?
Well, one thing I was going to point out, Dana, is that when they started seeing these dogs with DCM, increased cases of it, are we just detecting it better? Right. Are people getting to their veterinarian office more often for regular checkups and not just a shot visit? Mm-hmm. You know, is it in certain bloodlines? I mean, there's so many factors to consider. And I'm always, like I said, one of those that scrutinizes everything. And so I don't know if we're just seeing more cases of it with better screening or not. But, you know, with all the ultrasounds, Doppler ultrasound is great for watching the heart function, and, you know, our increased technology with ECG and so forth. I think we're just seeing more, we're finding it more often.
Right.
But let me just put one more thing out there. Heartworm medications. You know, a lot of people are scared of heartworms, and there are certain areas of the country that you need to be using heartworm preventative if you can't control the mosquito population, or at least your dog's exposure to that. But again, be discretional.
Right.
Just like with the flea and tick products, the ivermectin in HeartGuard can affect the heart the same way that potentially affect the heart the same way that of these other products. Simparica, NexGard, Credelio, I'm just naming a few of Revolution. All of those have potential toxicities.
Sure. Now, I just want to make sure I understand what you just said. I know any of those could lead to a toxicity, because we were treating a Great Dane one time. She had a bad case of mange. And if I recall correctly, it was ivermectin that we were giving her sort of in an increased scaled dosage. And I was fostering her. And so I had all the stuff. And I remember one day I increased her to the next threshold of dosing, and we almost lost her. I mean, she was in ivermectin toxicity really bad. So are you saying not only do we have a toxicity risk, but it can become one of those cumulative toxicities as well?
I believe so, Dana. Okay. I do believe so. And we have to just think of these flea and tick heartworm products as potential toxins that can accumulate until we know differently. Now, that I know that they're saying that if you're using Bravecto and HeartGuard together, that they have to be given at least a week apart.
Sure. I recommend that. I mean, no matter what you were doing, I would recommend it be separated. Right.
But in certain parts of the country, let's take Nevada or Utah in the desert areas. It's now recommended that you give a heartworm preventative 12 months of the year, even for cats. And I that was part of my continuing education this year. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know, that's recommended here in the South, North Carolina. Our vets in North Carolina, South Carolina recommend it year round. And if you don't do year round, then that sort of voids the warranty or the guarantee that they have that if your dog does contract heartworm, because they'll pay for the coverage if you do contract it, some of these medications. But if you don't do it on schedule year round, that doesn't apply.
Right. And so then we have to consider these animals with chronic illnesses, and we have to be discretionary. Now, I counsel my clients, you know, if you're in a heavy mosquito area, and it's that time of the year when you can't control well enough the mosquitoes from getting on your dog. Let's say you've got a hunting dog or a working dog, you know, and it's outside all the time. Probably you're going to have to use some chemicals to control that, you know, that chance of them getting heartworm. But going back to those desert areas where you never see a mosquito, or even in Colorado, the only times we see a mosquito is around a pond or a lake. The rest of the time, we can leave, when we're out there on vacation, we can leave our door to our condo open, and we never even get a fly in there all week. So, and mosquitoes are just non-existent unless you're around that wet area. It doesn't seem right to me to be putting a chemical into your animal every single month with possible cumulative effects when there's no risk involved.
Yeah. I personally, and I've talked about this with my clients, and I think it's somewhere on my website, but I use a modified schedule. I take winter months off. I don't do it monthly. It's more like every 6 or 7 weeks. So maybe, you know, and I can't advise people to do that, right? And I cannot say this is a suggested guide, but that's what I do. But can you maybe briefly tell people how the life cycle of the heartworm works and what's really happening when we use these chemicals?
Well, here again, Dana, the heartworm is sprayed by mosquitoes. And so when an infected mosquito bites your dog, it can transmit the microfilaria, which is a little immature heartworm, into the dog's tissue, where it goes into the bloodstream, travels to the heart, and sets up house there and reproduces. So, you know, in Iowa, we have, it can get down to 30, 40 below in the wintertime.
Yeah.
You're not going to see a mosquito.
Right.
So the life cycle of the mosquito, I'm sorry, of the heartworm, it takes 6 months for that microfilaria to fully mature into an adult heartworm. And those adult heartworms, if you've never seen one, they look like a long spaghetti strand.
Right, exactly.
And they actually plug up the pulmonary arteries, and that causes either heart failure or a massive heart attack. So again, when you are around those areas where you have mosquitoes, you need to be do some preventatives. But there's here's the problem though with mosquito still has to bite to transmit, and the flea and tick products. Let's just back up to that for a second. A lot of people don't understand that it's not a repellent. Those products are not repellents.
Yes. Could you say that louder for the people in the back? Okay.
Those products that you're putting on topically or giving a pill to are not repellents.
Right.
So the insect still has to bite the animal for it to work. So if your dog gets bitten by a tick and the tick attaches, yeah, it's going to die because it's going to absorb that product, but it's already had the chance to transmit Lyme, Ehrlichia, anaplasmosis, or other tick diseases.
Oh, exactly.
So I use essential oils. I tell people there's nothing safer than a high-quality, therapeutic-grade essential oil blend to put on your dog before you go out for a walk. It's a little more time-consuming, absolutely, but then you have the repellent activity that it's 100% safe.
Right. Okay? Yep. I tell people that all the time. You know, again, I can't do medical stuff, but I can educate with what I know. And then people can make their own best decisions. But people argue with me all the time, like about the Lyme vaccine, for example. It's very, it's pushed upon us here because of ticks in our area. And I'm like, the tick has to bite your dog to get it, to die.
Right.
And if he's already bitten your dog, isn't a better option to prevent them from landing on the dog at all with essential oils?
That's right.
Thank you for saying that. And friends, I did not prompt her to say that, but I am going to pay her.
Well, Dana, going back to the Lyme vaccine, it's only 50 to 85% effective depending on which vaccine manufacturer that you use.
Right.
But it doesn't prevent the other tick diseases from entering that dog's body. So, you know, the Lyme vaccine is not a guarantee. And I know we have ticks. We're in Northeast Iowa. We're in wooded areas, and we're only about 30 miles from the Mississippi River. So we have a lot of ticks. We have a lot of Lyme disease in this part of the state. Very familiar with it, and it's not a nice disease. But again, if we can use safe, effective products like essential oils to act as a repellent, we're going to have a lot better success in keeping our dogs healthy.
Yeah. Awesome. And speaking of essential oils, are there essential oils that are supportive to the heart?
I believe there are. One that I really like for heart is Lang Lang. Mm-hmm. It's a funny name. It's Y-L-A-N-G, and that's duplicated, so it's Lang Lang.
Right.
There are other essential oils. Helichrysum is a great one for circulatory blood flow, lowering blood pressure, that kind of thing. So anything we can do to support the heart. Cypress is another one that really aids in circulation. And if you've got any edema, like the dog is in end-stage heart failure, the cypress really helps to get that extra fluid moving and excreted from the body. Those are just three that I came up with. Lavender's calming, anything that we can do for, blood pressure lowering. Lavender even lowers blood pressure. Yeah. And I'm saying this just generically as a doctor. I'm not trying to promote or compare these oils to a drug, but these are known effects these essential oils have.
Right. I think I have one last question, and depending on your answer, maybe there'll be another one. A dog that is predisposed to DCM or perhaps has the heart murmur or some indication that there is a heart health issue, should we restrict their exercise? You know, like should they avoid competitive sports? Or I mean, I think a walk's good for everybody, but should there be some limitation on that?
I think it all depends on the severity of the condition. Obviously, if we have end stage heart failure, we're not going to force that animal to walk. We're not, if we've got early stages, you know, where maybe there's a murmur detected or maybe a little bit of abnormality on an EKG, I usually leave it up to the dog to decide, do they want to go out, how much? As far as competitiveness, it all depends on what happens during that competition. If it's agility, you got to be a little careful with that. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I'm not saying this is a general rule, but you know, heat and humidity are things to factor into that too, because it's going to create extra workload on the heart.
Right. Okay. Awesome. I think that's it for my questions.
Okay.
So what I think I heard you say, as especially for these dogs with predispositions to dilated cardiomyopathy, a raw fed diet, or at least a fresh food diet with a light cook, right? But ideally raw fed, good supplementation, semi-annual checkups, and, mm-hmm. and maybe layer in some essential oils to the process.
Absolutely. And try to eliminate as many toxins from the body as you can.
I knew I was forgetting something. That's the one. Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Barb. This has been fantastic.
And you're welcome.
I made a post about this in my group this morning. I wish I knew way back then what I know today. And I'm sure that some point in the future, I'll say that still for things that I continue to learn, because you've given me a lot of new information today that's been extremely helpful. And I hope that this conversation we've had will help many people who have dogs that fall into this category understand what some of their proactive steps can be. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dana. It's been really, this is a topic I love talking about, and just appreciate you having me on here to educate everybody.
My pleasure. Come back again anytime.
Okie dokie. Thank you, dear.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach and Well-Oiled Canine. I'd love to have you be part of the team. As you are learning more about wellness and natural solutions for your own pets, please visit my website, caninecoach.dog, for a lot more information about nutrition, wellness, and behavior for your dogs. If you're interested in learning more about essential oils specifically, please visit my page, welloiledcanine.com. And we'd love to see you in our group. It's a Facebook group called Dogs Well Oiled and Well Fed. You can find it by going to the group section of Facebook, and our name is Well Oiled Canine. We look forward to seeing you there, and I would love to help you with a wellness review or any questions that you have about Volhard dog nutrition or essential oils, homeopathy, or wellness for your dogs. Thank you, and have a great day.